Welcome to the OnFit Podcast.
This is Mark Sobel. I'm the U.S. Chair of OnFit. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Danai Kiriakopoulou, OnFit's Chief Economist, Research Director, and Chair of the OnFit Sustainable Policy Institute. And together, we have the great pleasure and honor of hosting Kevin Stiro. Kevin is the chair of the Federal Reserve's new Supervision Climate Committee, a multidisciplinary committee designed to develop a supervisory approach to increase the resilience of supervised institutions to climate-related financial risks. He is also the co-chair of the Basel Committee's Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Risks. And before that, Kevin was one of America's foremost supervisors heading the supervision group at the New York Fed, and he's even written extensively about productivity and innovation. So thank you for joining us today, Kevin. Danai and I are looking forward for roughly the first half of our discussion to asking you about the role of climate finance and supervision, your new role at the Fed board, and your vision for it. And then we'll turn to Q&A from the audience, which can be submitted via the chat function. So let's dig in. Kevin, can I give you the floor for any opening remarks you'd like to make before we turn to questions?
Great. Well, thanks, Mark, and thanks to my, it's a pleasure to be here today. Before we jump in, I'll just give a little background on the work that we're doing on the financial risks of climate change. So this is clearly a topic of considerable importance from the perspective of the financial industry. Governor Brainard of the Federal Reserve Board spoke on these topics over the last few months about the role that financial institutions can play in tackling the risks of climate change. And she outlined both microprudential and macroprudential perspectives. As you all know, the international community is very focused on this topic, and large firms are making substantial investments from both a risk management and a strategic perspective. So just to step back to frame some of our upcoming conversation, as a supervisor, our primary goal is to ensure that the firms we supervise operate in a safe and sound manner and that they can manage all the risks that they face. And the core of this effective risk management includes measuring traditional banking risks like credit, market operational risks, risk identification, risk mitigation. And these risks can materialize from a range of different shocks, a recession, a geopolitical event, a bad actor, and climate change. And our goal as supervisors is to ensure that firms are resilient to all of these risks. So as you mentioned, the Fed has recently established a system-wide supervision climate committee with a goal to ensure that firms are resilient to climate-related financial risks. We're in very early stages of this work, doing analytical work, doing public engagement, what's necessary to build our understanding so that we can have a robust, analytically sound framework as we approach the supervisory questions. Of course, any changes to the supervisory program, should we make those, would be appropriately tailored across institutions to their size, complexity, and geographical differences. But to be really clear up front, we don't have any views at this point about whether additional supervisory or regulatory actions might be appropriate. As I mentioned, a big part, I think, of our program, of our agenda right now is engagement and collaboration between the private sector and the public sector that will push everyone forward in terms of our understanding of these very significant financial risks. So conversations like this are an important component to that engagement with the financial industry. So look forward to the dialogue going forward.
Thank you for that. We're truly delighted to have you today, and that's a great opening to segue into our questions. I'll start off. So in reading the literature and reviewing speeches, there's much focus on climate finance transition and physical risks. So what trends are you seeing in how banks manage climate-related financial risks, and do banks have the right tools and processes in place to manage them?
So as I mentioned, as you point out, we've been doing a lot of engagement with the industry. That's an important part of our agenda for the Supervision Climate Committee. So we've talked to large banks, both in the U.S. and through the work that's been done by the Basel Committee's Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Risks. And there are some themes that have emerged over those discussions. So one is that firms are clearly focused on this topic, both from a risk management perspective, but also a strategic perspective, thinking about the opportunities to work with new and existing clients. And this focus reflects pressure from a number of sources. Firms are thinking about the business opportunities. They're thinking about investor demands. They're thinking about what their clients need. They're being responsive to their employees. Second point, and this came through loud and clear in some of our discussions through the Basel Committee's task force, most firms are viewing climate change as a cross-cutting risk driver. So not necessarily a new risk that needs to be managed, but as a driver of traditional banking risks, credit, market operational risk, et cetera. And I think that's an important point because it suggests that the existing risk management framework is largely fit for purpose. And now the question is, how do you incorporate the unique characteristics of climate-related financial risks into the existing risk management frameworks? We've seen active preparation, firms thinking about material risk inventories, risk frameworks, doing analytical work to try to quantify the exposures to both physical and transition risks. And that is common across firms, although there is some variation in focus depending on business model and geography. Firms that have large concentrations of certain mortgage exposures, for example, might be focused to a greater extent on physical risk than transition risk. And I'll just emphasize that what we've done is engaging with the largest firms at this point. We haven't done outreach with smaller firms, and we don't plan to do that at this point.
Great. Thank you, Kevin, and welcome also from me. It's great to have you here with us today. So you've spoken about banks, and it's actually really interesting to hear about your view on integrating climate risk into existing risk frameworks. I think a lot of institutions in the financial sector are grappling with that question, whether we need new models or not. But in your opening remarks, you also spoke about the role of supervisors and, of course, you're co-chairing also the Basel Committee's task force that you referred to, and you just published a report about measuring and identifying risks. So how do you see also the role of supervisors in terms of looking at the resilience of the financial system in the face of climate risk?
I think it's important to go back to the purpose and mandate of supervision, and our job is to ensure that the banks we supervise operate in a safe and sound manner, that they manage all risks, and that they remain resilient to the risks that they face so that they can continue to provide the critical financial services that the financial system offers. So with that mandate in mind, it's important to be clear that the question of climate change itself, while an important issue, is not part of our supervisory mandate. That is not part of our direct mandate. We focus on climate change to the extent it impacts the safety and soundness of the firms that we supervise. So we're working with our colleagues domestically and around the world to build our understanding about these issues and to think about where there might be gaps in our supervisory framework. As you know, banks have existing enterprise risk management frameworks, and they're thinking about where there might be new challenges, differences related to the financial risks of climate change that will cause them to need to make enhancements, adjustments, or changes to the risk management framework. And then our jobs as supervisors will go in to assess that. And we're going to move carefully on this question. We're going to continue to engage with the industry to make sure that we have a full understanding and appreciation of the issues. But as I said, at this point, we don't have a view about whether or not there are changes that might be needed from a supervisory perspective. We're still in the capacity building stage.
Well, thank you for that. In your opening remarks and in those comments, you have alluded to the supervision climate committee. Maybe you could drill down a little bit and tell us about what are your primary goals for the committee in the first 12 months. And if you don't mind my asking, climate issues can touch financial stability more broadly than just from a supervisory standpoint. You mentioned Leo Brainerd, my former boss at the Treasury. I think in one of her recent speeches, she mentioned also that the Fed has recently created a financial stability climate committee. Can you clarify what the roles of the two committees are and how they relate to one another as well?
Sure. So when we think about our supervision climate committee, we put this together as a group of senior folks from around the Federal Reserve System to bring multiple perspectives to the questions around the microprudential risks from climate change. We think it's important that we bring in a range of views. I think anytime you have a complex problem with inherent uncertainty, you can come up with more robust conclusions and insights when you take a multifaceted perspective. So we have folks from around the Federal Reserve System, from different geographies, folks who have training as attorneys, as economists, as financial supervisors, and we can bring all those perspectives to bear. And we're trying to do this in a very rigorous analytical way, first building a positive analytical foundation, a really strong understanding of what the issues are. And we're doing that by investing in data, by investing in analysis to better understand the different transmission channels, for example. This was mentioned, one of the subjects of the Basel Committee Task Force report that was released yesterday, a deeper dive into some of these transmission channels. We're engaging with the industry to understand how they're thinking about climate change. And all of that will build a foundation. And only then can we turn to this question of a more normative perspective on what an appropriate policy response, if any, might be at that point. So that's the Supervision Climate Committee. And we talked about this in the Supervision and Regulation Report, some of these risks that was published last fall. From the financial stability side, as you mentioned, Governor Brainerd talked about the Financial Stability Climate Committee, which is thinking about the same risk drivers, but from a macroprudential lens, thinking about the potential impact on the financial stability of the sector as a whole rather than individual institutions. That work, as was described last fall in the Fed's financial stability report, and talked about the broad framework that is used around financial stability work, including vulnerabilities within the system and the role that climate change might play as an amplifier as some of those vulnerabilities. Things like greater opacity, maybe incomplete markets that might have a way to amplify shocks through the vulnerabilities in the system. So our colleagues in the financial stability side are going through a similar process, building understanding, thinking about the framework, and only then would they come to the question of whether or not there are steps to a path forward. We're working very closely with those colleagues. There are some areas where there's clear overlap. Data and modeling would be one obvious example where building capacity in that space will be to the benefit from both a microprudential and a macroprudential perspective.
Thank you. And I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on that, because so far we've spoken more on the microprudential side and the supervisory agenda of the Supervision Climate Committee. But how does this supervisory approach also fit in the broader work that the Fed is doing on climate policies and also across all of its mandates?
So I think the mandate is really the key point there. From our perspective, we think about the role or the impact that a changing climate might have on the full range of Fed mandates. My focus is on our supervisory mandate around the safety and soundness of institutions. The Financial Stability Climate Committee's focus is around the impact of changing climate through various transmission channels to the financial stability of the U.S. economy. And that is clearly within the Fed's existing mandate. So it's in no way a new mandate, but it's a new set of shocks that could impact how we think about that. And the reason I think that mandate is so important is there is variation across different jurisdictions. And colleagues in other countries, supervisory authorities or central banks in some cases, have a broader mandate than we do. And we're staying very focused on our safety and soundness and the risk management perspective for how we should think about the impact of climate change on financial institutions.
Well, thank you for that. Some other supervisors, like the Bank of England and the ECB, are conducting climate scenario exercises to explore the resilience of the financial system and individual firms to climate risks. Is the Fed considering conducting scenario analysis as well? And often one reads about climate finance stress tests. How do these relate to scenario analysis?
Yeah, so I think that's an important point. And we talked a little bit about this in the Basel Committee, the task force report that was released yesterday. So the way I think about it, scenario analysis is a tool that can be used for what-if exercises to try to think through how a set of shocks, either climate-related or technology or policy, the reactions of investors, of firms, of consumers, how that could play out across different scenarios based on different assumptions and impact individual firms or impact the financial system as a whole. I think it's important to distinguish scenario analysis from stress testing. In my view, scenario analysis is a complementary but distinct tool from the stress testing work that we already do. So, for example, in the U.S., our stress tests are relatively short time horizon, measured in quarters, very quantitative, assessing the impact of well-established shocks that then permeate through banks' balance sheets and income statements and have implications for capital adequacy of individual firms. By contrast, scenario analysis typically is longer term, more focused on business strategy and the viability of firms over a range of uncertain scenarios, and more qualitative in nature. So those are distinct tools. Each could be very valuable. And as you point out, some other jurisdictions have made major steps in those areas. But for right now, we have not made any decision about whether or not the Fed would pursue scenario analysis as a complementary tool to our existing stress tests. I think it's fair to say that we're all in early stages of this work. Much of the international work is described as exploratory or pilot exercises, and that seems exactly appropriate to me. This is very new area. It is enormously complex in terms of things like tipping points, nonlinearities, uncertainty, feedback effects. It's also really complicated from an implementation perspective when you think about the data needs, the modeling needs, how you put these pieces together in a unified governance structure. So all of that takes time to build. But there's been enormous progress. I think the work that the NGFS has done has been pathbreaking to bring this approach more into the mainstream, to lay out tools, to lay out scenarios that could be used going forward. And we're focusing on how we build our capacity to assess those tools, and then we'll think about what might be best suited from a policy perspective when we move a little bit farther down the path.
Yeah. talk to the stress testing and scenario analysis, but more broadly in integrated climate risk. And the NGFS has done great work on that. They've also set up a work stream looking at bridging the data gaps that the ECB and the IMF are co-chairing. There are obvious challenges with data about quality in terms of integrating them in the models, et cetera. How is the Fed thinking about those challenges? And how are you also considering your role as a lead in terms of leadership in supporting also the financial sector and the industry in making progress with the data challenges?
Yeah, so this is clearly just a foundational issue around our ability to assess, measure, evaluate climate-related financial risks. We see this internally when we're thinking about our own work, and it's one of the most common themes that we hear when we talk to the financial industry. The roundtables that we hosted last year as part of the Basel Committee work, our own engagement in the U.S., this question about the granularity and breadth of data that is required to accurately assess the physical risks, it's just enormous. Just as one by now common example, it's clear climate change is a global phenomenon, but the actual manifestation will have enormous heterogeneity across jurisdictions. It needs to be assessed locally with different data than was typically used, say, for credit analysis. There's a growing focus within the industry and realization about the need for geospatial data that puts precise locations on assets. I think it's no longer enough to know where a company is headquartered. You really need to know the physical location of all the primary assets. And this is something that comes up again and again in our conversations. And there's work that's being done to develop that data and make it useful. But that type of granular data right now is limited. It takes significant resources to acquire and to process. So I think that's part of where the industry and the official sector are building capacity. Maybe a related point, moving from the data to what you do with the data around the modeling question. Models are very complicated in this space for a couple of reasons. One is that historical relationships might not hold in a world where the severity or frequency of physical shocks, for example, might be different than it's been in the past. A second reason would be the types of transition that some are projecting could lead to fundamentally different industrial organizations for economies as certain sectors grow and other sectors contract. So that's a complex thing to model. And then just the uncertainty around the timing, the severity, how the shocks might play out over time. So all of that suggests that trusted models that are trained on historical data might prove to be poor guides for what happens in the future. So that's part of the uncertainty. We talked about this in some of the Basel work about uncertainty basically across every chain of the links from how emissions might impact the climate, how climate impacts might manifest in ways that then have economic or financial sector effects, how those economic and financial sector effects might translate to the balance sheet or income statement or the business model of the firms that we supervise. So there's model uncertainty and parameter uncertainty, there's data quality issues. All of that adds to the challenge that we face.
A tall order for you. And to add to the complexity, so in the U.S. and internationally, there are just many, many regulators. And then there are standard-setting bodies on top of that. Certainly in my experience in the wake of the global financial crisis and through the G20, we stepped up the role of the Financial Stability Board as a loose coordinator of the international financial regulatory agenda. There are a ton of bodies now working on climate related issues. how do you plan to coordinate across the many efforts underway, both internationally and domestically, so that everybody is rowing in the same direction?
Yeah, so you're quite right that there's a large number of interested participants on this topic, and the coordination challenge is one that's clearly there. Speaking, for example, from my perspective with the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Risks, we've had active engagement with other international authorities like the FSB or the NGFS. We're working closely with all the participating members of that committee. So I think forums like that are really important to ensure that information is being transferred, that we're all leveraging the best practices that are out there. And I expect that to continue going forward. From the Fed perspective, we're involved in all of these international efforts. As you mentioned, I'm the co-chair of the Basel Task Force. We're engaged with the work through the Financial Stability Board. The Fed recently became a member of the NGFS, and we're actively participating in that work. So all of that engagement is happening through multilateral fora. And at the same time, we're talking on a bilateral basis with colleagues domestically and internationally to ensure that we're sharing these best practices and are aware of what's going on. One other point that we hear quite a bit from the financial industry is the importance of consistent standards and harmonization in terms of what policy steps might be taken in the future. So we'll continue to work with our international colleagues as we go through the plan to identify and implement any potential changes to frameworks in the future. And then finally, on the same topic, it's always important to keep in mind the different mandates and the remits that different authorities have. And that's part of the ongoing conversation to ensure that there's a broad range of tools that each authority can use in a way that is best suited to their particular mandate or remit.
Thank you. And a final question from us before we move to the audience Q&A. And you referred a few times to the Basel Task Force on Climate-Related Risks, which you co-chair with the ECB's Frank Elderson, and you've just published the reports. What is on the work agenda? What's coming next in the work of the task force?
So as I'm sure you all know, last year the Basel Committee noted that climate change can have both physical and transition risks that are relevant for individual institutions and for financial stability as a whole. And the committee then established this task force on climate-related financial risks last February. So Frank and I have been co-chairing this for a little bit more than a year now, and we tried to proceed in a very gradual and sequential way, building capacity first and then moving towards questions of policy. So last year we put out a stock take of what different member agencies had done in the space, in the supervisory space related to the financial risks of climate change. And then we turned to some analytical work to try to build a stronger foundation for our understanding. One report that came out yesterday was around transmission channels to try to really map out those linkages I mentioned before, going from the change in climate to impacts on the economy and the financial sector to the risks on bank balance sheets. And then the second report on measurement methodologies looked at the tools that were being used both within the private sector and in the official sector. Many of the same themes in those reports are the ones we've already discussed around uncertainty, the complexity, the long time horizon, data and modeling challenges. So now building off of that analytical foundation, the next step is to think about whether there are any gaps in the Basel framework related to the financial risks of climate change. And we'll do an assessment, a gap analysis of that spans all three pillars of the Basel framework, including regulation, supervision, and the disclosure elements for the banking system in general. Again, just to be really clear, we don't have views yet on what those policy, what that gap analysis might be. We're going to have to do the work, and we'll see where the assessments take us. We have no preconceived notions about what the outcomes might be. That will depend on the work that's done going forward.
Danai and I, on behalf of OMFIF, would like to thank you for a first-rate, excellent, wonderful discussion today. So thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to join us today. We wish you the best of luck, and hopefully we'll be able to check in on you in the future and find out how the Fed's work is evolving in this important area.
Right. Well, great. Well, thanks for having me. You're quite right that there's a lot of work to do. We're fortunate to have a great team working on it and look forward to future conversations.
Thank you, Kevin Syro.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the OMFIF Podcast.